It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, last week we talked about the durable power of attorney, and we'd like to continue to discuss some of the details, some of the factual scenarios that occur with regard to the issue of the power of attorney. Now, first of all, I think we've already said, but it bears to repeat, the word durable just simply means that the power of attorney is acting through the duration of the incapacity of the person who signs the power of attorney, grants the authority, or known as the principal.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that the durable part means it's permanent.
No, it's not permanent during the duration of the incapacity, and there are times when people are in an accident, for instance. We've had many files like that where they need the power, or they're out of the country. There's another example, these military powers of attorney, where they are being used on a temporary basis.
So durable relates to duration.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, last week, mostly, we talked about conflicts, if you will, or tension or dilemmas between the principal and the agent. And the concept, the idea of, you know, my dad says he wants me to be power of attorney, but he won't let me see the checkbook.
Yeah, right.
You know, I took over the power of attorney, and now, you know, my mom won't speak to me anymore, thinks I'm stealing her money, things of that nature. And, of course, Wes and I mentioned that, you know, we're dealing at this point with our elder family members. They're not feeling well. They're aging. They're under stress. There are heightened concepts of fear, frustration, and all of that plays into these issues.
Yeah, the fear and paranoia kind of takes over there, and sometimes because of the very short-term nature of their own lives.
Correct. So I think today we can move to, not that we finished all of the scenarios between the principal and the agent, but today we can move to, well, okay, the agent is acting. Who many times is a son, a daughter, a sibling, and someone else, though, in the family believes that the agent is not acting in the best interest of the principal.
Right.
And so they make an appointment with Wes or myself, and they begin to lay forth factual scenarios that they are concerned that the agent, whoever that might be, is taking advantage of, in some way, the principal. Self-dealing, if you will. Breach of fiduciary duty, if you will. So let's talk a little bit about that today.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, when we end up in these situations where maybe the family member that's not in the power of attorney, you know, is concerned about the actions of the agent for the principal, then, you know, it's an interesting dynamic because this, like, once removed or one layer removed person really normally doesn't have standing to do much of anything other than just maybe, you know, inquire about it.
They're often a distance removed as well. I mean, they're often somewhere else.
Could be, yes. You know, whenever we have these conversations, obviously we're going to look at the power of attorney itself. Sometimes the power of attorney will have, meaning the document, will have language in it requiring accountings.
Right.
A lot of times those accountings are only provided to the principal, though. But sometimes they have to automatically be provided, you know, every year, every 6 months or something like that. And if those accountings have not been provided, then sometimes, you know, that's a way that we can get ourselves to a point where we can get the information about how these, you know, the bank records, so on and so forth, how the power of attorney has, in fact, been used.
Is it a good idea when they're drawing up the power of attorney that the principal sees that there could be a future conflict, that they arrange for more regular accountings to other parties?
I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, we discuss with clients. I mean, sometimes you know, where we are with regard to that is the person we name as the agent, mm-hmm. The principal names as the agent, you know, really just wants to make sure that person has that information, but really isn't going to require much of a, you know, dissemination of information regarding accountings to anyone else, because, you know, who else in the world really needs to know about my business?
Right. Right.
So it's an interesting kind of dynamic there. But depending on the circumstances, it certainly may be in the best interest of the principal at the time they're entering the power of attorney to indicate that in the event the power of attorney, the agent acts,
right,
then, you know, require production of an accounting every year or something mm-hmm. like that. It's just case by case, really.
Okay.
But that really does come back to making sure you appoint the right person as mm-hmm. well. And obviously that goes without saying. The other thing, you know, that we talk about obviously is that you know, we may make inquiry of the actions of the attorney. In fact, if there are particular issues we have, that we know about that we can, talk about with particularity, mm-hmm. tell us what happened with this, tell us what happened with that, what happened with this money, so on and so forth. And in the event that everything is clean like it should be, then the attorney, in fact, shouldn't have much of a problem with answering those questions.
Mm-hmm.
But in the event that there's maybe something that the agent, the attorney, in fact, may not be proud of or is trying to hide, then
right.
upon that inquiry, you may, you know, get some deflection and some misdirection and some, I'm not going to provide this to you.
Yes.
Right. Right. So we try to work that out on the front end. As we've talked about so many times on this program,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't just haul off and go to court. You know, you don't involve a guardianship proceeding or whatever it may be right off the bat. You know, you try to work it out on the front end first. And in mm-hmm. the event that you can't do that, then what we end up having to do in many cases is file a petition for adjudication and appointment of a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is basically is it really brings all of these issues, it funnels them right into one place, mm-hmm. which is the office of the clerk of court in the county where the principal resides. And then we can all be together and talk about these issues, so as to protect this person, this principal under the power of attorney.
Right.
So, you know, we try to avoid that, but if we need to go that way, then that's fine. Now, one of the threshold issues with regard to these type situations is the principal, in fact, incompetent?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it's pretty obvious that they are, and sometimes we can't even get to the principal, so we don't know.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have medical records showing that he is or isn't, or she is or isn't.
Or
and sometimes we don't.
Yeah.
And sometimes maybe we can get to the principal and maybe he's good on one day and bad
that's
on
right.
the next.
That's right.
But maybe
good in the morning and bad in the afternoon.
Maybe that's right. Sundowner. So, mm-hmm. you know, maybe he or she is, on the borderline, but mm-hmm. certainly subject to influence from others. And if we have a high suspicion that there has been some influence and some misuse of funds, that type thing, then many cases, the guardianship, even if the court eventually determines the person's not incompetent, it's a great place to flesh out these issues about the finances
mm-hmm.
so that we see what's going on. And it also puts the attorney, in fact, on notice that they're not acting here with complete immunity.
Right.
You know,
right.
they can be brought to court and be questioned with regard to these things, even when the principal is, you know, certainly living and maybe questionable as it relates to the principal's competency and whether they're incompetent or not.
Now, let me ask this question though. Say you actually do have an agent who is working correctly under yep. under the power of attorney and doing the things correctly, but you still have another relative who feels like they're being left out or they're not being consulted enough and they want to try and take action. Does that slow down the ability of the agent to do their job correctly?
It can, but you know, in the event that the agent is acting correctly, and let's say that the other family member is over here creating interference,
mm-hmm.
well, you know, if that other family member, you know, has an attorney or even mm-hmm. doesn't, is inquiring about certain information, well, let's just provide that information to this person and maybe it'll calm them down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's something that we do see, you know, fairly frequently where we've got, you know, sometimes maybe we've got the children that live elsewhere.
Right.
But the trusted caregiver who's the attorney, in fact, who's been handling everything for years,
mm-hmm.
and the children are worried about mom or dad's money being taken away, that type of thing. So, you know, these are all dynamics that we deal with just because folks get older,
mm-hmm.
and this is, you know, a difficult situation in many cases. But, you know, normally if you can have a certain level of transparency with regard to your actions as the attorney in fact,
mm-hmm.
then that's going to, you know, basically quash any of these questions from others who may have an interest in what's going on.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. If you'd like to give us a call, you can call us right now at these numbers.
800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And be glad to take your questions on Let's Talk Legal from Harvell and Collins online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. And, of course, Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins every Tuesday morning to answer your legal questions. 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. We're talking about the powers of attorney.
We are.
And this is this also reflecting the new understanding, the new law as well?
To some degree it is.
Like calling an agent.
The things correct. We're talking about today really are not going to be changed mm-hmm. by the new statute.
Right.
But,
okay.
You know, that's coming as far as us going through all of that. But that's a January 1, 2018
mm-hmm.
Change on the books as far as the new power of attorney statute.
Okay, we got time.
One of the things, Ben, that we just a little detail that I want to get out there is that when we prepare powers of attorney, you know, we prepare them, we draft them, mm-hmm. we go over them with our client. They then sign them
mm-hmm.
under notary. A power of attorney does not require any witnesses, unlike, you know, a will
mm-hmm.
Or some of our other documents that we do on the estate planning side of things. Power of attorney does not require any witnesses. The document then is signed, and the document is a legal document. The original is maintained, its integrity, if you will, in a safe place, a fault mm-hmm. system, something of that nature. But the document is not operative until such time as it's recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not go and record every power of attorney
right.
that gets signed at our office. For heaven's sakes, I mean, you've got a power of attorney,
right.
Ben. I've got one. Right. Wes has got one. We don't need our agent right now to take over our affairs.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we have, everyone should have, a power of attorney. It is recorded at the time that it begins to be utilized.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a detail that I want our listeners to hear. Now, Ben, back to kind of what Wes was referring to and talking about. You know, we know that, and we have said so many times in the program, everyone needs a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And it is operative when it's recorded. And most of the time,
mm-hmm.
we do not run into issues.
Right.
The principal cooperates with their eldest son or daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The other siblings understand that their sibling is doing a great job, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, most of the time,
mm-hmm.
things go well. They go well between the principal and the agent. They go well between the agent and the other members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so the power of attorney is extremely useful. And it is a threshold document that keeps us from having to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative is this proceeding, the guardianship that
right.
Wes was referring to.
Right.
I mean, if you have a principal that notwithstanding he has a power of attorney, but absolutely says you may not use it,
mm-hmm.
son or daughter,
mm-hmm.
you know, or revokes it or, you know, will not honor the actions of the agent, okay, then the agent, notwithstanding having a document known as a power of attorney, is going to have to go to court and have a court order where they are the guardian of their parent.
Right.
The same is true with regard to competing agents. We call it the war of the power of attorneys. You know, sister has one, and then brother goes and gets one. Sister has one, but brother doesn't trust what sister is doing is in the best interest of their parent.
Mm-hmm.
Any number of factual scenarios we see, you know, on a weekly basis. Well, if there is no resolution, as Wes was referring to, in terms of just communication,
mm-hmm.
maybe lawyer to lawyer, maybe giving copies of bank statements, inventories, accountings, and notwithstanding, there are still
mm-hmm.
Issues. Then again, what we're going to have to do is to put all of these facts
mm-hmm.
before the clerk of Superior Court and have a formal guardianship proceeding and lay it all out there, make it very transparent, and the court will find what is in the best interest of the principal and have an order of guardianship. And now it is clear.
Mm-hmm.
The principal is adjudicated incompetent. The guardian is in place.
Mm-hmm.
The guardian is the guardian as opposed to some sibling.
Right.
Or someone who's challenging the guardian. There are now court filings, by the way, by
mm-hmm.
the guardian. They have to file inventories to show the court what they are doing. They have to post a bond, okay, with
mm-hmm.
the court. But at least there is now clarity. Now, what I'm trying to say here is obviously we want to avoid the court proceeding.
Yes, right.
If at all possible.
Yeah.
But there are just times, and that's why we're discussing this last week and again today, there just simply are times that even though we have the document, we have these gray zones where we are forced into a guardianship.
Mm-hmm. So even with the power of attorney, the guardianship may be necessary at times. So that's something that I think a lot of people probably escapes them. But it may come up. You had mentioned, Wes, about sometimes people that are in and out of clarity, their lucidity is sometimes good and sometimes not so good.
Right.
But to be consistent, they right. may need to have something more clear.
Well, no question about that. You know, the guardianship statute deals with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the court can find someone to be incompetent even if they have intermittent mm-hmm. periods of lucidity and are able to, you know, act in a competent manner just intermittently.
That's what makes the medical record so difficult. Sometimes they see a doctor and they're just fine.
Right. That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, the issue in a guardianship is going to be, is the person incompetent at this point in time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if, you know, sometimes you have folks who have, you know, a mental illness
mm-hmm.
and because of that, once they get off their medications a little bit, they just, you know, go crazy and they're doing things that are just unbelievable. But then once they're on their medications, they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, you know, just to create some stability, you know, so that we can protect this person and make sure that, you know, their assets are safeguarded and they're taken care of and they're not, excuse me, put in a position where, you know, they're going to put themselves in harm's way.
Yeah, so, well, I think that's the key words that you're saying is that they're being protected. It's not about the attorney in fact or the agent being protected. It's about the principal.
It's all about the principal. It just happens to be that sometimes folks get to a point where they don't know how and can't protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is, whether it be from a physical standpoint as it relates to their person or whether it be as it relates to their assets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as we get older, the likelihood that folks are going to be influenced by others and not have the capacity to handle their affairs just increases. That's
yeah.
just the way it is.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back to conclude this section as we're talking about powers of attorney and guardianship here on Let's Talk Legal, the right advice at the right time from Harvell & Collins. You can go online at harvellandcollins.com. Call for that appointment, too, at 726-9050. Hey, welcome back here as we are talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell & Collins about the power of attorney.
Right. So we were talking about the interplay of the power of attorney and a guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about sometimes, you know, we have to go the guardianship route because, you know, the power of attorney, the agent under the power of attorney really does not have the right to override the decision making of the principal. Mm-hmm. And if the principal has just become incompetent to the point where maybe they're making bad decisions as to their person or their finances and they're damaging themselves some way, then, in many cases we have to file a guardianship and bring all these issues, you know, to mm-hmm. the court.
Right.
You know, the threshold issue in a guardianship is going to be, number one, is the person incompetent. And you know, we look at some medical testimony, medical evidence with regard to that, the opinion of the guardian ad litem, maybe medical records, that type of thing. But once that determination is made, then the second thing, obviously, that the clerk has to do is make a determination as to who is to serve as the guardian.
Right.
The statutes have a preference as it relates to the order of who should be appointed.
Mm-hmm.
And a good power of attorney will have language in it indicating that in the event that the principal is adjudicated incompetent, goes through a guardianship, conservatorship, you know, there's this standard language, then it's my election to have so-and-so named as my guardian. And normally mm-hmm. it's going to be, obviously, whoever serving as power of attorney. And the clerk has to take that into consideration. They have to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And they shall, that's the language, shall, the difference between shall and may, mm-hmm. obviously, shall appoint the designee in the power of attorney. However, there's a catch-all there that indicates that, however, in the event that the clerk for good cause, you know, may mm-hmm. appoint someone else. So that shall is a little bit weak there in that
right.
statute. But nevertheless,
right.
the clerk has to look at that. And there has to be some type of strong evidence, extenuating circumstances to not follow the wishes of the principal as set forth in the power of attorney.
So, for instance, Ben, back to our big two categories here. If it's the principal mm-hmm. versus the agent scenario,
right?
Then the court is more than likely just simply going to honor the power of attorney and appoint that particular agent for mm-hmm. the principal. The principal doesn't want that agent to act. Remember, that
right.
was the scenario we've talked about.
Right.
But the court says, I'm sorry, you are incompetent, and the one that you signed in your power of attorney and appointed is going to be your guardian. If it's the war between the powers of attorney, brother mm-hmm. against sister, sister against neighbor, whatever the case might be, now we have the question before the court mm-hmm. as to, well, we see that the principal appointed this particular child, but the other children are saying this child isn't acting properly, and now we're going to see what's really in the best interest of the principal, mm-hmm. and that's what's going to govern.
Mm-hmm. All right. And again, all of these things are handled at first in the planning process. When you meet with the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, you can give them a call and make that appointment at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.